Thank you. Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Judy, and I'm an alcoholic. Kevin's doing his little thing there. What are you doing, Kevin?
I'm curing you of COVID.
You're on mute. AA ought never be organized.
Go ahead.
Oh, I guess he's trying to turn the screen around, or yeah. I'm not sure what he's trying to do. Oh, there we go. Hello.
We're working on it.
I know. It's hard to turn those screens around, huh? I get it.
You know how hard it is to pick you up and carry you around?
Yeah, I get it. Oh, boy. So, how's everybody doing this week? I hope you're all good. I'm doing pretty good. We've had some nice weather here in Ashtabula the last couple of days, and it gives me hope for spring. And oh boy, I got my first vaccine today. I was told that I could get the Johnson & Johnson, the one shot, but by the time I got there and got my appointment, they said they were out of the Johnson & Johnson, so I got the two-shot Moderna. So I think I'll feel a little more comfortable being around people. Some of you may or may not know, right after Christmas, I had a pretty major health event and ended up in the hospital in ICU. And they diagnosed me with congestive heart failure. So I've had to change my lifestyle a little bit. And, So that's why I'm a little hesitant about being around people or in crowds until after I at least got the one shot. I do miss in-person meetings, and I suppose many of you do as well. And I've attended two of them here in our area, but I know the people that go, they social distance and they wear masks. And we do have some meetings here that are in-person meetings, and the young ones just choose not to wear masks. And so I steer away from those meetings right now. So if you're in my age bracket and you have some medical issues, I hope that you take good care of yourself and make decisions that are going to be beneficial for your personal situation, and never mind what anybody cares or thinks about it. So I have to tell you, I've been thinking about this step, and what it boils down to actually is this is the number fourth step of 12, and they're in order for a reason. And the steps actually do have to be taken if you want assurance of sobriety. If you don't take the steps, then there's probably not going to be any assurance of your sobriety. So it's pretty basic. It's not rocket science. It's pretty simple. If you want to stay sober, if you want your life to improve, then you have to take the steps. You have to apply them to your life. Step four, as you may or may not know, is a personal inventory. One little second here. made a fearless and searching moral inventory of ourselves. So fearless would say we're going to approach it and just put fear aside. We're going to put fear on the shelves. And that means fear of maybe what you've heard about this step. Now, I didn't hear anything bad about step four when I was newer in sobriety and looking at taking this step. And I was about 3 years sober before I was ready to take this step, according to my sponsor. So I wasn't fearful about it. I have a Catholic background, although I do not practice that. So I knew what confession was, and it seemed to me it was pretty similar, and just that I was choosing someone other. I could choose a priest, but the big book gave me the option of choosing someone like my sponsor, and that's what I did. So I didn't have any problem with it. My third sponsor and I had formed a relationship that was built on just 100% trust. So I knew that she had my back. She never told me anything that was going to be harmful. And all of her suggestions and guidance were beneficial to me. So I had no problem in following directions with step four from her. She kept it very simple according to the book. She said there's three parts to, to step four. The first part is the three columns listing your resentments. And that's outlined for you on page 65 in the big book. And then the second part is a list of our fears. And the third part is we're going to take a look at our sexual conduct and see where we may have caused harm for that, because of that. And then consider a way that we might use a new idea about sexual conduct going to the future. So that's how she broke it down. She gave me 2 weeks to complete the three columns. Then she gave me a couple of days to complete my list of fears and a couple of days to have a look at my sexual conduct. So a period of no more than 3 weeks. And she was quite adamant about that. And when I sponsor women, that's what I do. I don't let them drag on and procrastinate and mess around. Let's just get going and get done. Now, I don't know where the connotation of you should be afraid of this and, oh, all your deep, dark secrets. And that wasn't my experience. I didn't hear that. So I didn't have that. But I know a lot of the girls that I sponsor, and in the room sometimes I hear talk of, oh boy, that poor step, it'll get you every time. I don't know about that. I guess like that set-aside prayer. If you've heard that, I guess I would ask you to set it aside. Pretend you didn't hear it, because it doesn't make any sense. If you've already looked at steps 1, 2, and 3 and you've taken them the best you can, you're on the right path. You did those, even though you may have had some fear, you did them, and you got to where you are now. So here you are on the brink of step 4, just keep going forward. I want to bring out an idea on page 63. This is important as well. After we take step 3, the very next paragraph says, and this is at the bottom of page 63 in your big book, it says, next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning. So next, what does that mean, next? It means right now. It doesn't say next year. It doesn't say next month, does it? It says next. The very next thing. Take a breath and do the next thing. So now we're going to get busy on step 4. And as soon as I do step 3 with whomever I'm sponsoring, then we begin step 4 the very next week. I think for those of you that haven't heard my other weeks when I've spoke on the first 3 steps, I have the girls that I sponsor make a commitment that we're going to work on steps for an hour once a week. That's a minimum commitment, and they have to be able to do that in order for me to sponsor, because if they're not willing to do that, then I'm not going to be a good sponsor for them. I can tell you that right now, because that's not too much time to put into trying to maintain sobriety. If it is, go find another sponsor, because I can't help you. So we do step three, and that would be the finish of that week's work, and then the very next week we start into step four. And they know that I give them the assignment of starting to write the list of resentments. Now, I don't know about you, but when I first was reading this book, I had no idea what a resentment was. It was like somebody you were mad at. Well, that's one way that you could define it. But actually, a resentment is re-feeling. Re-feeling what? Well, let's say you're a person like me and you've grown up in a house where what you've always heard is a lot of chaos. You've heard fighting, and you've heard physical abuse, and you've heard screaming as a result of that, and you cringe now every time when you get out of that situation and you hear chaos or you hear commotion like that. You re-feel what's happening right now, and you re-feel all of those feelings from the past as well. So you're feeling not just what's going on in the moment, but what has gone on in the past. And that makes for a very difficult way to live. Now, I would have no way of knowing this. Let's see. For instance, for myself, I shared, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, I had been sexually abused by a priest in the Catholic Church. So when I got sober, people thought it would be a good idea for me to go back to church. And I said that I was willing to follow directions, so I wanted to be willing to do that. But when I went to church, I passed out. I walked in church, sat down, and I went out cold. So that was the reaction. That was the re-feeling of everything that had happened to me in the church, and it just was overwhelming. I got so anxious that I passed out. Now, did I know that was what was happening? No, I didn't know why that happened, because I just didn't have the skill to know that. Let's see. So my father, on regular occasion, would be very physically abusive to my mom. I mean, she could lose teeth or end up black and blue, and it was very difficult. So when I heard somebody raise their voice, I would shake. I would just be so anxious about what was going to happen next. Now, that falls into place even today sometimes, not to the extent that it was, though. So it causes me some stress. I think everything in Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't change overnight. Everything that that we're trying to improve and become better at in our lives changes slowly over a period of time. And at least that's been my experience. And so things that were very, very difficult to cope with in the beginning, I have learned because of you a way to manage them and a way to remove much of that craziness that I brought here with me, thank God. So for that, I am really grateful. So I hope a little bit of that background helps you. Now, we all know if you have a store or business, you have to take an inventory. Now, here's my sponsor, God love her. Here's what she said to me about step four. She said, well, Jude, she said, step four is real easy. She said, let's say you want to go to California. Well, that sounds like a good deal. Okay, let's say I want to go to California. She said, so you're going to follow a map. But honey, if you don't know you're leaving from Ohio and you actually think you're leaving from Florida, you might have a hard time getting to California. Your route might be a little bit screwed up. Well, what has that got to do with step four? I'm looking at her like, you know, a deer in the headlights. She said, you can't get to where you want to be if you don't know where you're starting from. We have to see what we got to work with. What are the goods that make sense? What are the characteristics of your being that are going to help us as we go forward in this journey of sobriety? Oh, dear God. Well, I couldn't identify any of those things, but I went ahead and I made my three-column list of my resentments. And I'm just going to give you three examples, perhaps so that you can relate to them, maybe, maybe not, or perhaps you can think about, if you haven't done your four step, you can think about how this might work for you. So it tells us in the big book, we make the list. So column one, we do column one first. Now some people, like me, had the erroneous idea that we do the first item in column one, and then we go to column two, and then column three, and then we come back here and go to number two, resentment. No. Don't do that. Make a list of all your resentments. Just completely fill out column one. Yay, you've done that. So some of the things on my list, there were many, but so my mom was on there. The IRS was on there. And an ex-husband of mine. Now, we were kidding about ex-husbands right before the meeting, and I'm here to tell you that it is not a requirement for membership that you be married and divorced a whole bunch of times. But it is kind of ironic how many of us have had a lot of marriages. I guess that would prove that we're not very good in the personal relationship department. Oh, gosh, imagine that. I wonder why. So I made my list, so I have these three names on there. Now, the middle column says, why am I resentful at them? Well, it would take six pages to say why I was resentful at my mom. She was an alcoholic. I had every reason to be resentful at her, for God's sake. She was an idiot. She put up with my father. She this, she that. She was never there. Why didn't she leave him? Why didn't she act better? Why didn't she give us more time? Why did she have eight children? Why did she say, I wish you had never been born? Why didn't she ever tell me she loved me? Now, I could go on and on and on, but that was what was happening in our house. So that's why I was resentful at my mom. The IRS, that's an easy one. They audited me. I'm nobody. I'm a little nobody here in Ashtabula. I hardly make enough to make ends meet, and they give me an audit. Man, I hate them. And then my ex-husband, for Christ's sake, he never worked a day in his life. He was an idiot. Oh, Lord. I could just go on and on, you know. He, just all kinds of things. He thought, here... He actually told me I had to get a driver's license. Over your dead body, I said. I'll never get a driver's license. I was sober 3 years. You see, I was a nut job. All right. So now what do these things affect? There's just really three categories that any of these resentments can affect. And what are these three categories? These are our basic instincts. These are God-given instincts. What are the instincts? Our personal relationships, how we get along with others and what they think about us. The next one is financial or security. That's a God-given instinct. Food, water, a safe place to live, clothing. An income, you know, the means to be able to live. And then last but not least, the sexual instinct, which all of these are God-given. So if any of these instincts are threatened by someone, then we have a Well, at least I have a negative reaction to them. So let's take my mom. What was threatened there? Well, for God's sake, I mean, actually, all three of them. Now, I didn't know that when I did my fourth step. I just thought my security was threatened because I never knew if Dad was going to spend all the money and we were going to have food money, or if we were going to be able to get Jimmy the shoes he needed, or whatever. My personal relationships, my God, all my friends, I can't bring them to my house because you never know what's going to go on there. Mom might have to go to the hospital and is just waiting for me to get home from school to take care of the kids. It was nutso. But I didn't think my sexual instincts were affected by her or her actions. But in reality, they really were, because I grew up thinking something very negative about sex and relationships with men. So that was a result of her behavior. So the IRS, let's look at that. They audited me, so that surely affected my security instinct, didn't it? And then my ex-husband, well, we could just go on and on, all his shenanigans. He didn't work, so that affected my security instinct. He accused me of things I wasn't doing, so that affected my personal relationship. And I withheld sex because, you know, it didn't take long and I couldn't stand him. So that affected my sexual instinct as well as his. All right. So that's as far as we go in step four by ourselves. That's what my sponsor told me. Now, next week, we're going to go into more depth with this, with step five, but I'm just going to leave that at this conjuncture here for you to just kind of think of. You know, you do this in steps, and you don't have to get too crazy about it. You don't have to make all that sense about it. Let's see. It says, if we were to live, we had to be free of anger. That might be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. It says, we turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. Oh, boy. Well, this is the angle that I looked at with my sponsor. I couldn't see an entirely different angle on my own. I was incapable of that. You see, these people had done things to me that caused me to have a resentment. How dare you say, you know, I had something to do with it? Don't even suggest that. I wasn't ready to hear that. So she didn't take me there. She said, make the list. Do the three columns. All right. Now you're going to spend a couple of days and you're going to now make just a list of your fears, everything that you're afraid of. I'm afraid of spiders. I'm afraid of success. I'm afraid of failure. I'm afraid of being a bad mom. I'm afraid of God. I'm afraid that there is no God. I'm afraid there is a God. I'm afraid of elephants. And the list just went on and on. I'm afraid I'm never going to have courage. I'm afraid I'm not going to meet the mark. I'm afraid I'm just going to be a stupid idiot for the rest of my life. I'm afraid this is as good as it's ever going to get for me. So she said, okay, you're just going to save that for when we do our fifth step. And then she said, now I want you to look at your sexual conduct. I want you to list the people you had harmed through sexual conduct. Well, that was a lot. I had, you know, messed around with some married men. I thought if I had control of the situation, if I was involved with a married man, then I couldn't get hurt, because I knew he couldn't walk away, because we were never going to be involved anyway, not in a relationship that I was seeking. And I was so mixed up in what I thought was good sex conduct. I remember my sponsor in... So I made the list. I made the list of the harm I caused, as much as I could know about myself at that time. And then during the fifth step, Mary helped me identify things that I could strive for in the future. But interestingly enough, and I'll share this with you because, you know, so many women that come in the program have had experiences in life history such as I've had. And the very fact that we were sexually abused when we were young, and this is true for men as well, and these are serious things that need to be worked out with a sponsor, and you need to guide people into a more healthy way of living. Just as a matter of fact, we're more promiscuous because our sexual activity has happened so early. We have a higher sexual impulse. This is just medically true. So we're struggling with that, and we don't know how to behave because no one has ever taught us. So my beloved Mary just set out to help me build some ideals, and I'm just going to briefly share this with you because I don't want to leave you hanging on this one till next week. She said, Jude, how do you feel after you have really good sex? Like a piece of shit? Now that's pretty sad, isn't it? And she said, let's go down to the beach. It was evening, maybe sunset, time like this. I live by the beach, by the lake. So we went down to the lake, and she said, I want you to look at the sunset. And she said, after you have really good sex, that's how you should feel. You should feel in awe. You should feel calm. You should feel serene. You should feel blessed. You should feel the power of God, or the power of your creator. I said, oh my God, this will never happen. This will never happen. And a lot of you men have daughters, and, you know, a lot of you men also have sons. And my fourth husband, some of you knew him, Jim Kidner. When we started dating, I had to do something different, so I didn't get the same thing I always got. And I said to him, this is what I think, good sex should be like. And he said, wow. He said, and I said, we can't have sex because we're not married. And, He said, well, all right, I don't know where you're going with this, but I think I want to take the journey with you because it sounds pretty interesting. So we went down to the lake almost every night at sunset so we could just be in that moment of some kind of spiritual awesomeness, some kind of spiritual knowing. And we didn't have sexual relations for the 4 years that we dated until we were married. And it was life-changing for me. And God love him. Buzz was his sponsor, and Mary was mine, and the two of them kind of worked together to help us get through that. But it was just something that I needed to do. I caused enough harm, I couldn't do that again. So my whole idea about relationships, my whole understanding about sex, and that it is a spiritual involvement and an intimacy between two people that is normal and beautiful, all came to a really good understanding and I could apply that to my life. Now, no one had told me that. When I left home, the first time I got married, you know, I said to my mom, what should I expect? And she said, well, you'll know when it happens. That's what she told me. That is the education I had, other than what my friends told me, about sex. And maybe it's true for some of you sitting there or listening. I know for a fact the girls that I sponsor, when I say to them, where did you get your sexual education? They tell me they got it from their friends in junior high. Well, oh my God, isn't that great? So my children, you know, they had a little different kind of sexual education. Thank goodness, one that was clear and beautiful. So that's what I have to say about that. So that basically covers step four as far as what I'm going to talk about tonight. Next week, we'll get into step five and we'll get into actual causes and effects. And you'll find that there was some amazing things that I learned about myself and some remarkable ways of new actions that I could take that I never had to go back to that old kind of behavior, but that it was going to be baby steps and took time. There's a couple of things that I wanted to just read to you, if you just give me a minute. So regarding the sexual conduct, we ask ourselves these questions. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Who had we hurt? Who had we aroused jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Well, that I did all of that because I didn't know any better. What else do I want to share with you? You know, even if you're on the right track, you'll get run over if you just sit there. So we have to take the action on these steps, don't we? We have to do something. Oh, I love this one. I wrote this down. I heard it at a meeting. Wait till you hear it. Maybe you want to get a pencil. If you don't heal what hurt you, you'll bleed on people who didn't cut you. I love that. And that was 100% true for me. God is still writing your story. Quit trying to steal the pen. Trust the author. And the last one. We cannot become what we want by remaining what we are. And we repeat always what we don't repair. And that has been so true for me. So I was eager and willing to repair my past so that I didn't have to repeat it again. And it became very clear to me the harm I had caused and the pain and suffering as a result of some of my actions based on self-centeredness. So we're going to talk about all of that next week. I hope I helped somebody understand step four a little better. And I want to thank you all for being here. And I'm going to make a commitment to all of you that I'm going to be there next week with my crew. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Judy. Now we're going to open the floor for questions. Folks in the room here, just raise your hand. I'll come around. People on Zoom, just unmute yourself and ask away when you're ready. Anybody in the room have a question for Judy?
Hi, I'm Zach. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Zach.
Judy, thank you for sharing. My question for you would be, in your experience, what advice in terms of how far back to work kind of those fears and those resentments? Do you go back to, you know, before you were drinking, or just kind of what has happened when you were still active with drinking?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. And I guess I started, you know, I had a resentment against myself, and this was the very first resentment against myself that I could think of. I was in 11th or 12th grade, and I stole a bathing suit. And that was on my list of resentments. So how far back did I go? I guess I started there at about 11th or 12th grade. Previous to that, I had no memory of something that I needed to put on paper. So I don't know. I think there's an author, like I said in one of the readings, that kind of helps us along. As we begin to write down these things, things come to mind, and that's what you go with. You don't have to make this too hard. And it's not a life story. And I think the things that need to get on paper will get there if you but invite God in and ask for his guidance. It's kind of automatic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question.
Judy, Marion, alcoholic. Hi, Marion. So you go strictly by the book, and I try to do that too, but so you don't add a fourth column to reflect on what your part is in any of that. No, you don't do that. It does kind of come out, you know, if you keep reading in the book on 66 and 67, looking at the other person, and, you know, they might be a sick person and we can't live in anger. So that kind of takes care of that, but you don't do that column. And if you don't, is there a reason why you don't?
Well, it doesn't tell me that there's a fourth column in the book.
Okay.
And I could not understand that and know that for myself. I could only see what I could see. That became apparent in doing step five. So my sponsor took me the rest of the way. So we did cover like the fourth and the fifth column, and I ended up with a list of my character defects as a result of that. Okay?
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. You know, a lot of treatment centers have these models to work from, and I don't have any problem with them. And if the girls that I sponsor, you know, if someone's been in and out and in and out and done some four steps, I don't care what they use, as long as we're staying in the book and we're getting to where we need to be so that they can have continued sobriety. I don't care. I don't think there's a wrong way to do the steps, huh?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Next question.
Hi, this is Erin Staff. I'm a recovering alcoholic. Hi.
Hi, Erin.
I really enjoyed this. I'm sorry I missed your first couple of steps. Thursdays are hard, but I guess she kind of actually asked part of my question, so I'll save part of it for next week. But the part that I do want to know is, if you find that a sponsee is having a hard time identifying where they were one of those, you know, like where they were selfish or fearful, how do you kind of pull that out of them? What method do you use to have them realize? Like, for an example would be like, when somebody is abused, oftentimes that's where I see it the most when I've worked. I don't have a lot of experience, but you know, they're like, well, how could I have been selfish? How could I be this? How could I be anything? Because I was a victim. So I know how I'm curious to hear how you go through that.
For me, that would be the unselfish part would be that I lack the ability to forgive. what in me makes someone else unforgivable? Do I think my name is Mrs. God? I hope not. And it just was as simple as that. But you know what really goofed me up in the beginning? You see, I thought acceptance meant that you approved of it. And I really thought forgiveness meant you were supposed to then have a reconstructed, healthy relationship. That's not true. You see? So thank God for good sponsorship in my life, who straightened me out very quickly on those ideas. You know, we have to cast aside old ideas. And, you know, the new ideas, the actual truth of the matter, has to come through. So I was able to forgive, but not approve, and not be in any kind of a relationship, nor would I ever want to be. I don't want to be around people like that. Thank you. Thank you for the question, honey.
Thank you.
I'm sure a lot of people, you know, struggle with that. I know a lot of women do. A lot of men do.
One of the, I think also along those lines, maybe even thinking along the lines of using that as a crutch or reason to drink is kind of a form of selfishness too. Like,
sure. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Next question. Anyone besides Kevin?
Hi, everyone. I'm Helen O'Neill, alcoholic.
Hi, friend.
Hi, sweetie. Judy, I love listening to you. You made it sound like, okay, I can do this. You know, when I don't have to figure out all those complicated things that are inside me. But I was told one time, and you probably believe it too, that cause, that second column in our resentment list, we're supposed to keep that pretty brief. We don't have to go into a lot of detail, right? We could do detail in our fifth step.
Correct. Absolutely. Thank you, Helen.
Anyone else? Anyone on Zoom?
Hi, everybody. My name is Kevin Clark. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Judy. Thanks again for another spectacular night. I really, really appreciate this. I just want to remind everybody, if you've missed anything, you can always go to the website and listen to each one of the steps on the website. So that's just an FYI. As far as the fourth step goes, I'm kind of looking forward to how you approach the fifth step, because that's a whole different thing. I kind of was told to do a four step, and I was pretty good at following directions, but the fifth step was enlightening to me as how my sponsor handled my four step, and then as a sponsor, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how you handle other people's four step. So I'm really looking forward to that, and well, I guess we'll get a chance to see you live. And thank you very much for tonight. I really appreciated it. And I really don't
have a question. I
appreciate
you too, Kevin.
I don't have a question, sorry.
Thank you. Anybody else? Judy, thank you again. Okay, are there any announcements from the membership?